everybody. I'm Karen Hart Glass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. So sorry I missed you last week. I had a gold crown fall out of my mouth. Yeah. This teeth thing, if I could do it all over again, like if I was in charge of what I was eating since birth or even before birth, I would never give my kids sugar-sweetened cereals. I grew up on Captain Crunch and all kinds of sweet things. Even though sweets were to some degree a treat back when I was a child and we didn't have soda all the time, I know that it started a history of bad habits when I was young, and I had a lot of cavities as a child. I don't really have them anymore, but the damage has already been done to my adult teeth. And I've got a few that have had crowns put on them, and you may remember the root canal I had at the end of last year. But the idea is that if we can protect our teeth from the beginning, we will be so much better off. And I'm not looking forward to some of my other teeth that have crowns on them to weaken and have to deal with them. But the good news is I missed the show last week. My dentist could see me right away. And the gold crown that had fallen off, he was able to put back on. And then he filled whatever had worn down wherever the holes were. And I was amused. I didn't realize this, but this crown had fallen off 7 years ago. So I am very much into reduce, reuse, recycle. And I am reusing that crown for as long as I possibly can. It was a day of repair last week. And you may remember me talking about my sagas with my 2011 MacBook Pro that I am keeping alive for as long as I can because I know how detrimental it is to create a computer, a cell phone, the resources that are required to make these machines that are so useful in our lives, but at the same time, they're so damaging to the environment that I want to at least not abuse what I'm already abusing. Does that make any sense? I use my computer all the time and I would like it to last as long as possible. I believe in fixing, not throwing away. And this computer is on its sixth life, I think. And I'm happy to have it working. So what happened? I brought it in when it died again to the Apple store, and they told me they don't repair computers that are 6 years old or older, and they don't make parts for them anymore. So I thought I was really done this time. But I found a place in Alabama. They're called PowerBook Medic, and they repair computers like mine. All I had to do, well, I could have sent them the whole laptop, but I really didn't want to do that. And I found a YouTube video that showed me how to remove my logic board. I removed it. I sent it to them. They sent it back. And I got it back on Tuesday, that same day when I got my crown repaired. And I was able to put it back in. And it's beautiful. It's up and running. And I'm so happy. Yay! And while I'm talking about fixing things, last Tuesday was totally a fix-it day. I replaced the faucet cartridge in my kitchen sink. And I don't know what it is. I think it could be because we cook a lot and we use the sink a lot. But it seems like I'm replacing cartridges all the time. They were originally made one way and then they changed. And ever since then, I've been replacing them. They don't make things like they used to. What do I want to talk about today? I want to talk about food. I've been spending most of my week doing some projects related to food, of course, and I've been reading a lot of interviews with experts and pulling out the highlights of these interviews. It's a project I'm working on for another business, and it's been intense. And I've actually discovered some things, and I've learned a lot, and I want to share some of those highlights with you. One of the things that I heard from one expert that I have tremendous respect for is that this one landmark study from the World Cancer Research Fund and the American Institute for Cancer called Food, Nutrition, Physical Activity, and the Prevention of Cancer, A Global Perspective, which came out in 2007. This expert said that they recommended that we eat beans 2 to 3 times a day, or beans with every meal. And I took that to heart. And I thought, I'm going to try and eat beans all the time because I know how healthy they are. Dr. Furman says we can eat as many as we want. And they're so protective against colorectal cancer and so many other things. And their calories aren't even totally absorbed by our bodies because they are so wonderful at feeding the good bacteria in our body. They're a prebiotic. The resistant starch in beans is a prebiotic that feeds the probiotics in our gut. And that's good. And I find that when I eat beans regularly, like every day, everything's better. And if I take a break from beans, not intentionally, but I could be traveling or in a place where they're just not readily available, or maybe I just haven't done my routine of soaking and cooking and having a lot of cooked beans available. I find that when I eat beans again, sometimes I'll have more gas, that sort of thing. I just find everything moves better when I eat beans. And I've discovered, too, it doesn't have to be a lot of beans. In fact, if I eat maybe half a cup in a meal, in a sitting, that's enough. Sometimes I might be so hungry and I eat a giant soup that has a lot of beans in it, and it's too much. That's when I get a little too bloated or gassy. So just enough, about a half a cup per meal, is what works for me. And I've been including beans in my breakfast, and that's been kind of fun. Now, if you visited my blog and go and see What Vegans Eat, that's the name of the blog, and I've got over 1,300 posts now, you'll see that my partner Gary and I have eaten a lot of oatmeal. We like rolled oats. We eat rolled oats. We eat steel-cut oats. And it's been our go-to breakfast for a long time. Now, doesn't mean that it's the same every day because we may top it with different raw nuts and seeds, different fresh fruits, maybe some raisins and apricots, dried apricots. It's fun, and it's never the same. Fresh berries or frozen berries, it's a great breakfast. But I decided, let's play around with beans for breakfast. And I just posted a recipe that I'm calling Breakfast Black Beans. I cooked a big amount of black beans, and I put them in jars. Two of them are in the freezer, and one of them is in the refrigerator. And as I finish the first jar, I'll pull one of the other ones out of the freezer. And this way, I'll always have cooked beans to eat. So I started with a half a cup of black beans, and I added unsweetened cocoa powder. You know, beans go very well with cocoa. It's that mole sauce, if you've ever tried it. It's not a sweet chocolate. It's more the bitterness of the chocolate lends itself very nice to savory dishes. I also added cinnamon. And I wanted it to have just a slight amount of sweetness so that it wasn't tremendously bitter. And I cut up 4 dried apricots and put them in there and added a little bit of water. And I just cooked this all together. And then when it was all done, I added some bananas on top. I thought beans go really well with plantains, right? In Mexican cuisine, I didn't have plantains, but bananas will do in a pinch and you don't have to cook them. And it was a great breakfast. I really enjoyed it. So I've been doing it every day since. This is my 3rd day of breakfast beans. And I like them. And they're not always going to be the same. The following day, I made a similar thing that was kind of sweet, but kind of savory. And today, I made a totally savory bean dish. I keep adding the cocoa powder, though. I'm in a chocolate kind of mood. I wasn't eating chocolate for a while. I don't know why. I just didn't feel a need for it. I wasn't thinking about it. And now I'm in this cocoa mood. I just want to put cocoa in everything. Maybe I need magnesium. I don't know what it is, but I'm cool with it. All right, back to the report I was talking about, where one expert I was reading about had said that this report, Food, Nutrition, Physical Activity, and the Prevention of Cancer, A Global Perspective, from the World Cancer Research Fund and the American Institute for Cancer Research, they recommended we eat beans 2 to 3 times a day or at every meal, something like that. And you know me, when something intrigues me, whether I want to support it or I question it, I go to the source. So I went to the report. It's a fantastic report, and I highly recommend downloading it. And when you have time, read it. It's huge. There's a lot of great information in it. The original report, which is called the First Expert Report, came out in 1997. And that was problematic because they were just getting started. And there was a lot of anecdotal stuff. But then in 2007, the second expert report came out. And it was a landmark study, best of its kind, and is now a standard. And they just came out with a third expert study for 2018. And I think that had something like 12,000 pages or something. I didn't download that. I just downloaded the summary. But what did I find? I found that the recommendation is to eat whole grains and or beans, legumes, at every meal, or two or three times a day. And I thought to myself, that's interesting. This report, which was cited by this one expert, is recommending either whole grains or beans, not just beans. And I wondered to myself if this was just an oversight by the expert, or if he knew something more and wanted to encourage people to eat more beans rather than eat more whole grains. I don't have an answer. Maybe you do, but I'm just throwing it out there. Now, you know I'm a big fan of Dr. Joel Fuhrman, and he promotes eating greens, beans, onions, mushrooms, berries, raw nuts, and seeds. Beans are up there as an unlimited food, something we should eat every day. Whole grains are not. Whole grains are considered a healthy food, but not as nutritionally dense as the leafy greens or the beans. And he recommends eating them somewhat in moderated fashion, not in unlimited amounts. Now, there are other doctors that will recommend other things. Dr. John McDougall, for example, he's the starch guy, right? He wrote The Starch Solution, and he's really big into the whole grains. So everybody has a different opinion, but I'm kind of siding with the Fuhrman decree, with the gene bombs, and I eat whole grains, but I'm looking to get more satisfaction from legumes. I'm just thinking it might be a good thing. So here we go with breakfast beans. And I've published that breakfast black bean recipe at Responsible Eating and Living. You can check it out. It's really easy. But what makes it easy is once a week, at least, you prepare a big pot of beans. And what does that mean? That means before you're ready to cook, the beans need to have been soaked. And if you're sensitive with flatulence and gas, the ideal thing is to let your beans, your legumes, soak for 48 hours. And not just sit there for 48 hours. You want to rinse them and let them soak in fresh water every 12 hours. So that means twice a day for 12 and 12 and 12 and 12, 2 days. You can rinse and soak and rinse and soak and rinse and soak and rinse and soak. And then you can let them soak a little longer until you're ready to cook them. And then cook them and drain the water and then cook them. And then I like to store them either in the refrigerator or the freezer. And they're there ready for everything. For breakfast, for lunch, and for dinner. So that you can eat your beans at every meal. Now, the recommendations that came out from this report, Food, Nutrition, Physical Activity, and the Prevention of Cancer, a Global Perspective, from the World Cancer Research Fund and the American Institute for Cancer Research back in 2007, is very similar to the recommendations, if not the same, that they're putting forth in the current 2018 report. They recommend keeping the body as lean as possible, with a body mass index between 21 and 23. Now, some of us may even be below that, but they're recommending that for normal range, 21 to 23 is the goal. And to be physically active, that's not news, but for some people it might be. Anything equivalent to brisk walking for at least 30 minutes every day, and then as you get better, aim for 60 minutes or more of moderate or 30 minutes of vigorous physical activity every day. And things like watching television is something that should be limited. There's nothing good to watch on television anyway, right? Maybe I don't know that, but if you have a recommendation for something on TV that you think people should be watching, let us know. I'd like to know about it. And of course, my favorite recommendation is plant foods. Eat mostly foods of plant origins. And this is where they come in saying that we should eat relatively unprocessed cereal grains and or pulses with every meal. Cereal grains, unprocessed and or pulses with every meal. Limiting refined starchy foods and people who consume starchy roots or tubers as staples should also make sure that they're getting enough non-starchy vegetables, fruits, and legumes. Legumes are awesome. And then limiting intake of red meat and avoiding processed meat. Of course, limiting alcoholic drinks and limiting consumption of salt. And they make an interesting statement saying to get your nutrition without dietary supplements. Now, I believe we should supplement with vitamin D, B12, iodine, if not eating sea vegetables or iodized salt, and maybe even a little zinc. I get that information from you know who, Dr. Furman, and some other nutritional experts, and that's what I follow. I also take a algae-based DHA, but I think what they mean here is don't rely on supplements for your nutrition. The nutrition should come from whole or minimally processed foods. And on that subject of supplements, I was reading an article that compared eating broccoli versus a broccoli substitute. And guess what? The bioavailability of sulforaphane and urucin was dramatically lower for those who were consuming broccoli supplements compared to fresh broccoli sprouts. Now, when I was going through my cancer treatment about 12 years ago, I did take concentrated broccoli sprout supplements, and I'm sure they're helpful, but broccoli sprouts are much, much better, and broccoli sprouts are cheaper and safer, no side effects, because it's a whole food. So back to the report. This is the last thing I'm going to say about it. The Food, Nutrition, Physical Activity, and the Prevention of Cancer, a Global Perspective report, where they recommend meeting nutritional needs through diet alone. I'm going to say, I think that this is with respect to nutritional needs, that we need to get our nutrition from food, not from little things like juice plus or fiber powders. We need to consume real, real food. And real plant foods are so much tastier than popping pills, I think. Okay, on to the next subject. Last Thursday was a primary election day here in New York. I decided to be an election poll worker. I went to the training, which I found fascinating. The opening of the training manual talks about how we should treat people. And I was thinking, this is beautiful. This is genius. And everybody should get this kind of training. It talked about treating everyone with dignity and respect and not expecting that they have all of the same abilities that you do, and to be mindful and to see if someone may have a hearing impairment or a vision impairment or some other sort of impairment, and to be respectful and helpful. I love the opening of this manual. And the rest of the information was, it wasn't very exciting, but they made it very clear that all we had to do when we got to the poll site was follow the instructions for our particular position. And it was kind of complicated because of all the systems that they had in place for security and privacy. And I would like to think that it makes a difference. I don't know if it does or not. Because when we were wrapping up at the end of the night, it was really mayhem. It was really confusing. But we did it. Anyway, I learned a lot during that day about people and about food. So I made a point of not talking politics. We were advised not to do so. And it didn't make sense to do it on that day. One of the things that's required at each inspector table is to have a representative from the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. We had a table of three. There was a Republican, and he had voted for Donald Trump for president. There was a Democrat, and she had campaigned for Donald Trump. And I was sandwiched in between the two of them. And guess who I did not vote for? So I really didn't want to talk about politics, but it was a great opportunity to talk about food and to talk about being non-judgmental and respecting individuals. And I felt like I had to do that all day. Now, something that I learned, well, not learned, but maybe became aware of again, is how parents tend to be so overwhelmed with their busy schedules to the point that they may not be doing the best thing for their children, which is feeding their children the best nutrition. Some might even call this child abuse, but it is normal today, so we don't call it child abuse. Now, I don't have children. I made a choice when I was very young that I didn't want to have children. I didn't want the responsibility, to tell you the truth. It is a huge responsibility. And I know that most parents want the best for their children, but somehow when they get wrapped up in their schedules, the best kind of eludes them. And I spoke to parents about their children and children's problems, children who have allergies, picky eaters, that are not eating the best foods that they can. And many parents are just, they're frustrated and they just give up. They just want their children to eat anything. And this is really not the best practice. From what I've read and understand from people I respect who have children, the best thing is, number one, to set a good example by eating well and eating a varied whole food plant diet. The second thing is to stock the house, the refrigerator, the counters, and the cupboards with healthy foods, not snack foods. There's plenty of opportunity outside of the home to eat junk foods. The home shouldn't be a place for that. And when children are hungry, they will eat. And they will make healthy choices if those are the only foods available to them. It was heartbreaking because I spoke to parents about their children and the difficulty of feeding them well and the health concerns and the illnesses that occurred as a result. And it's just so unnecessary. And I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I wish that if I had been in control with the knowledge I have today of what I was eating when I was young, I would not have provided myself with the sugary cereals, can't even say it, the sugary cereals that I grew up with. I ate Frosted Flakes. I ate Raisin Bran coated with sugar. I ate Captain Crunch and Fruit Loops. And who knows what else. I did like shredded wheat. I liked it better when it was frosted mini wheats. Sugar, 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 sugar. And there was so much opportunity to eat sugar, and there's so much more opportunity to have sugar in our diets today. And you, of course, have probably heard the news that a lot of these cereals that are wheat-based and not organic have residues of glyphosate, which the World Health Organization has called a possible carcinogen. And it's from Roundup, a herbicide which contains glyphosate, being used not to kill weeds, but to speed up the wheat harvest. It's used as a desiccant, and it helps dry up everything so that the wheat can be harvested sooner than later and quickly and efficiently. And as a result, there are glyphosate residues in many wheat products today. Another reason, folks, to eat organic and perhaps avoid wheat products. Anyway, so many parents don't know these things. And it can be especially tricky with picky eaters, picky young eaters, and picky adult eaters, if everyone in the family is eating differently, and the one person who typically makes the meals is a busy person and doesn't want to be making different dishes for everyone. In those cases, I always recommend making a sort of buffet. And we do that a lot at home. And my partner Gary and I, we like all of the same foods, except for one food, which is mushrooms. He doesn't like them. But putting out a collection of foods, like a salad bar, for example, you can have chopped onions and you can have beans. Got to get those beans in there. You can have green peas and corn, all in separate bowls. And then the lettuce. And there's many different kinds of lettuce too, and people may enjoy different kinds there too. Romaine or mesclun or Napa cabbage or red cabbage or maybe a mix. Lots of choices, lots of colorful choices. Even adding some berries to the salad. Fresh berries if possible. They tend to be very pricey, especially in season, and I like to go with frozen berries. I let them defrost a little bit, but I like putting strawberries or blueberries on a salad. And when everybody can pick and choose, and if some people in the family are eating dairy cheese, I don't recommend it, but maybe some of you don't want to have it, it can always be in a separate bowl. The same thing with flesh, same thing with meat products. And that's why I love using glass containers. Now, I'm a particular fan of Pyrex. There are others out there. But we put everything in our different Pyrex bowls, cover them up, and put them in the refrigerator, and they're ready for the next time, the next buffet, which could be a few hours later because we tend to repeat a lot of times what we ate for lunch, for dinner. I was also very prepared for my workday as an election poll worker. We had to be at the site at 5 a.m. and we left at 10 p.m. That's a long day. And I am not a morning person. I didn't sleep very well that night before because I knew I was going to have to get up. But I did a number of things that really helped. Number one, in one of my Pyrex bowls, I made soaked oats. I prepared a bowl of a half a cup of rolled oats with some berries and raw nuts and seeds and some soy milk and put it in a bowl. And in the morning, I packed it in my lunch bag. I had some leftover food from our favorite Chinese restaurant in our neighborhood, Green Zenfany. And then I brought a couple of glass bottles, Takeya bottles, that are covered with silicone also. And one had my distilled water in it that we distill ourselves here at home. And I also made some genmaicha tea. That's the green tea with roasted or toasted brown rice. It's really comforting and yummy. And I went off. Now, fortunately, the site was across the street from where I live. So I knew that during a break, I'd be able to get home. But I hydrated all day. And when I finished drinking my two big bottles, one of tea and one of water, and I came home for a late lunch, I refilled it and I had it for the rest of the evening. Hydrating really, really helped, and bringing nutritious food really helped, and other people around me had not done the same. And I could tell they were suffering. A lot of them were like, oh, I need my coffee, I need my coffee. Of course, later in the day, some nice people walked around to all of us who were working and offered us donuts. Donuts. I smiled and said no thank you, but I really wanted to get up and scream. I couldn't help myself, and I mentioned to the woman working with me who wanted donuts, and she wasn't around when they brought them around, so she missed them. But I informed her that donuts are probably the worst food that you can eat because they have refined flour and refined sugar, and they're cooked at a very high temperature, deep fried, and they make acrylamides, which is a cancer-causing chemical made from foods that are cooked at high temperatures, and we don't need that. Now I want to talk about a new study that just came out in The Lancet, which is a very reputable journal. And it's a study that has provided many media outlets with sensational headlines. And I'm sure you've heard about it. And I want to talk about it and maybe bring some sense to it. Because a number of people have reached out to me and said, have you read this? Have you read about it? What do you think? So I'm sure some of you have been thinking that as well. So the Lancet article is called Association of Dairy Intake with Cardiovascular Disease and Mortality in 21 Countries from 5 Continents, a Prospective Cohort Study. That's a mouthful, isn't it? Different media outlets like WebMD, for example, simplify that title with a more sensational headline. Even high-fat dairy might be good for you. Here we go again, where we're reading different articles representing scientific data that's telling us that the foods many people love that they have learned are not good for them are actually supposed to be good for them. But it's not exactly true. Once again, information is misleading. So what is this about? To begin with, there are these big studies that go on. Like, we often hear about the Nurses' Health Study, right? And there's some good information and maybe some not so good information that comes from that. But it's interesting to have these observational studies where people fill out forms on a regular basis, and you can see if you can find trends. What's useful about it is it can provide enough information to lead to funding for a more rigorous study to actually determine cause and effect, because these observational studies never determine cause. They just see correlations. One thing goes up while another thing goes up, and we can say, does that one thing influence the other thing? And that's what's happening here. But there are so many different things going on. So this latest research is from a study called PURE, Prospective Urban and Rural Epidemiology. It's been going on for a long time now, and they've been taking information from over 135,000 people from 18 countries throughout 5 continents. Originally, they were surveyed and they had one blood sample taken. And repeatedly, they have surveyed these people again over time. So big can be impressive because you get a lot of data, but big can also be messy. Big can be complicated. One of the problems with this particular study is that the people are from so many different places with so many different factors going involved. There are psychosocial, socioeconomic factors, tobacco usage, different food policies in every country, and they all impact health. So it's really difficult to say that one thing may influence something else when all of these other things are going on. I want to point to an excellent article that came out about a year ago, and you can find it on the nutritionstudies.org website. That's T. Colin Campbell Center for Nutrition Studies website. The article is entitled, "The PURE Study's Conclusions on Fats and Carbs Are Misleading." Now, this came out a year ago. It's based on the same study, And I would say that the criticism about the results from this most recent Lancet report are the same and justified. So some of the things that are mentioned in this nutrition studies article include things like the study did not assess the quality of carbohydrates being consumed. So we know that when people are eating refined carbohydrates, and that includes white rice, the difference is going to be significant compared to those eating complex carbohydrates. And there are different low-income countries. For example, this article brought up Bangladesh as an example, where they consume primarily white rice. And that's their biggest source of protein and fat. And they're not getting many micronutrients, including the essential vitamins. And so some of these low-income communities that are eating refined carbohydrates, if you compare those who are getting some nutrition from high-fat dairy products, the results may show a difference where those eating the milk products are healthier because they are getting some essential vitamins and some more nutrients. Now, that doesn't mean it's the ideal diet or a better diet. That's what's problematic about this study, because it does not take into consideration a lot of different factors. In this nutrition studies article, they say that in this pure study, total intake of carbohydrates was reported, but not the sources of those carbohydrates. This is puzzling, since the researchers looked at different types of fatty acids. Therefore, in the pure study, an individual eating candy and soda would be classified as similar to an individual eating lots of fruits, vegetables, and sweet potatoes. Okay, we know that that isn't the way to evaluate a study and make observations that really make sense. So for those of you who have learned about this recent study and want to be armed with good information, you should go over to the Nutrition Studies website and get their article called "The Pure Study's Conclusions on Fats and Carbs Are Misleading." This show is called "It's All About Food." You know that. I know that. I've been talking about food on this program now for almost 10 years. And I'm very passionate about food. I'm very passionate about plant food. My motivation behind it, primarily number one, is for animals. And I want to find ways to help people reduce or eliminate animal products from their diet. And the way that I do this best is by making foods really yummy and delicious and providing recipes on my nonprofit website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. My primary motivation is for the voiceless, the animals. There's just tremendous cruelty today to get animal products on people's plates as nutrition. And the hurricane and flooding that just went on in North Carolina is a disaster. We're not reading a lot of news on it. There was a little mention in the New York Times about the flooding's impact on the waste lagoons. There are many hog farms in North Carolina, and there are many mountains of excrement that have been affecting the environment for a long time. The neighborhoods that surround these factory farms have horrible odors. Many people complain they can't go outside, they can't hang their laundry outside. And then when the excrement piles get too high, they spray this stuff on the surrounding fields. It's unhealthy, it's smelly, it's polluting the air, the water, everything, making people sick. And now, because of the flooding, some of the barriers that have been holding up these liquid piles of poo are breaking, and more pollution is occurring. There's only so much we can do. The government doesn't do a whole lot. The government is influenced by powerful lobbyists. The best thing we can do as individuals is choose plants and not pork and not other animal foods. So that's what I'm all about here. And I like talking about food, you know that. But right now I want to talk about something a little different because I'm also passionate about health. And I talk to many people who are going through health crises. I do a bit of coaching individually, one-on-one, helping people kind of navigate through some difficult times. I share my own experience going through advanced ovarian cancer. And I want to say that even more powerful than healthy, nutritious food on our health is our mind. And I continue to learn about the power of our consciousness and our subconsciousness on our own health. Fear and stress are tremendously powerful, and they work in ways that may not be obvious, but they can be detrimental to the immune system. When your body is reacting to fear, when your body is reacting to stress, it only has so much in it that it uses up a lot of resources dealing with fear and stress. And the immune system, as a result, may not be able to fight the way it needs to for things that are coming into the body. And when it happens day in and day out, fear and stress, fear and stress, fear and stress, that's an invitation for disease. The body just can't do what it needs to do when it's constantly dealing with fear and stress. So, even more important than healthy, nutritious food. And healthy, nutritious food helps us deal with stress. So they kind of work hand in hand. But fear and stress really need to be managed. So together, let's take a deep breath. I want to remind you to breathe. Such an important thing. And not only breathe, but breathe deeply. Think about your lungs and expand them as much as you can. When you take in a breath, think low and deep to begin with, expanding low and then building up as you expand the entire lung, each one. And then gently release. Breathing is so healing at any moment. So when you're first feeling fear or stress, breathing is the most nutritious and delicious thing you can do. Really, don't forget to breathe. And there are lots of different things you can do, of course. I really stress, no pun intended, I stress focusing on meditation, making it a priority the best way that you can, especially if you're in a healing crisis. Because meditation and breathing can help you deal with fear and stress. You don't have to feel fear. You don't. I know. I had 3 major surgeries in 15 months, and going into my first 2 surgeries, I was petrified. But then I instituted a consistent meditation plan, morning and evening, every day. And I went into my 3rd surgery feeling powerful and fearless. There's so much anecdotal evidence about the power of the mind. And I smile when I say anecdotal because the medical community, whenever they hear a startling story, a surprising story of somebody who should have died but lived, for example, they'll say it's anecdotal, meaning that it's one story and doesn't have any statistical significance to make a credible conclusion. But these anecdotal stories are proof that the mind has tremendous healing power. And I was recently reading about Wim Hof, the Dutch adventurer. Have you heard of Wim? He has shown that he can do all kinds of fantastic physical activity in freezing cold weather, just wearing shorts. He's hiked up many mountains and he's broken records staying in freezing cold water. He's done all kinds of things. And there have been some medical experiments done on him, injecting him with E. coli viruses, really fascinating stuff. And he has a method called the Wim Hof method of breathing, which enables him to connect with his immune system and protect him in these specific challenging situations. And whether his method can work for you or work for everyone, it shows that we have far more potential at protecting ourselves from stressful situations. And you don't have to do what Wim Hof does. You don't have to submit yourself to freezing cold water or hiking around really cold environments in just a pair of shorts. You don't have to do that. I mean, it's kind of fun learning about it, but it's amazing. And it's enough proof for me to show what we can do with our own minds. This idea was really driven home to me during my own healing journey when I discovered Bruce Lipton. And perhaps you've heard of him. He's a biologist and he started researching and studying the wisdom of the cells. That's actually the name of an audio program he created, The Wisdom of the Cells. And in a nutshell, he says, and he has evidence to prove it, that the cells in our body, the 50 to 100 trillion cells that we have, they respond to the environment they perceive. And I love that. It doesn't mean that they respond to a real environment. They respond to an environment they perceive. So what's happening? Our mind is thinking all kinds of things, and our brain, the chemist, the brain puts out all kinds of chemistry, chemicals, depending on what we're feeling. When we're happy, puts out happy chemicals. When we're sad, it puts out sad chemicals. And these things affect our body positively or negatively. When we're happy, we get chemicals that are good for us. When we're sad, not so much. And the cells in our body get those chemicals and respond accordingly. When you're feeding your body emotions, doom and gloom emotions, your body's going to respond accordingly with different chemicals that really aren't good for you. Or put your body in a fight or flight mode and not give enough resources to your immune system. That expression, don't worry, be happy, means a lot. But I remember when I was afraid and I was going through this cancer journey. Yeah, I want to be happy. But how do you do that when you're afraid? How do you do it? You can smile, and that a forced smile, and some ways that can help a little bit. I found the only way to do it is with meditation and positive affirmations. These things work. We have these tape recorders in our heads. I visualize it like we have these old cassette tapes. Okay, maybe they're CD players for more recent people, or maybe it's our consciousness up in the cloud. But whatever you think of it as, we have pre-programmed responses to things. And those pre-programmed responses may not be helpful. And they're not real. And we each have a choice to script our own responses to situations so that they support us and nourish us. And like I said, this show is called It's All About Food, and what I'm talking about right now is not necessarily food, but it's food for the mind. And our thoughts can nourish us or poison us. Think about it. Nourish or poison. Another thing I want to add here is that just because somebody tells you something, it doesn't mean it's true. Yeah, think about that. Just because somebody tells you something, it doesn't mean it's true. You may have a great deal of respect for that person.
But they're human. And everybody doesn't know everything. So if someone tells you, like a medical professional, like a doctor, that you have a great deal of respect for and maybe are intimidated by them, when they tell you that you have something that cannot be cured, you do not have to believe them. When they tell you there's only one way to manage your illness, you do not have to believe them. We're continually learning so many things. Many people believe that the brain could not heal. And now we know the brain can heal, that dementia and Alzheimer's are affected just like the heart is, and that a whole food plant diet full of fiber can reverse and minimize the risk of these chronic diseases. And you know what else? When someone tells you something like you have something that can't be cured, it's scary. And the rest of your days, you live in fear. But if you just flip that and think, I can heal, I can be well, it doesn't matter how long you live, the rest of your days will be good. So there's this idea, this perception of approaching life one way or another. You can approach your life in fear. You can approach your life with gratitude and strength and courage. And which feels better? I'm asking you, which feels better? I mean, it's obvious to me, approaching life with gratitude and courage feels better than fear. So if you're going to live one more day, or you're going to live 100 more years, your days will be better when you perceive things differently. And your 50 to 100 trillion cells will respond accordingly, because your cells want to feel good too. So when you're feeling good and you're the god of your cells will feel good too. And everybody in the body will feel good together. We just have a few more minutes, and I want to get back to what I was talking about earlier, including beans at every meal. I want to ask you, what are your favorite bean dishes? Because I'm eating a lot of beans now, and I could use some suggestions. I'm pretty creative, and I got a lot of ideas, but maybe you have some favorites that you like. Would you share them with me? You know where to find me. I'm at info@realmeals.org, and I'd really love to hear about what you do with your legumes. I've heard there are over 45,000 of them. So we've got a lot of bean choices to fill our days with. My message today is eat your beans and breathe. Beans and breathe. Will you do that? Let me know how it feels. How does breathing feel for you? It feels pretty good to me. Beans and breathe. Beans three times a day and breathe all day. I find sometimes that I hold my breath. Do you do that? Let it go. Let it go. Let it go. Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening. I'm Karen Hartglass, and this has been another hour of It's All About Food. I really appreciate you joining me today, and you can always get to me at info@realmeals.org. I love hearing from you. Have a very delicious week with beans. Thank you.